two young clergy couples were sitting around on a Sunday night sharing a pizza with four little kids running around the table with seminary debts and perpetually broke. Shared pizza constituted a big night out. Talking and laughing about their own parents, one of them finally looked down at the little rugrats around them and said, "I wonder what they will say about us." 4 decades have passed. The Harnish and the Miller boys are all grown with children of their own. And yet, on this Father's Day, it's worth it to ask, I wonder what they'll say about us. And I wonder if that's how St. John felt when he was writing these short letters. 1 John, he continually refers to the recipients as his beloved children. See what love the Father has shown us, that we should be called the children of God. The second letter is written to the elect lady, not in the Calvinist sense. The word means beloved. The elect lady, the beloved lady. We don't know who it was. Perhaps it was his wife or his mother. Perhaps he was separated by exile or imprisonment. Maybe he was using the feminine image for the church as his family. Perhaps he was writing to one of the clergy women of his day. Either way, he writes this letter filled with compassion for the family that was his and the family of God. The third letter is written to an intimate friend, beloved Gaius, thankful that his father, the children follow the truth. And on this Father's Day, perhaps for parents and grandparents, aunts and uncles, church family and friend, one way to put the question is, what will they say about us? First, I hope with St. John that they will say we walked in the truth. I hope they will say that we walked in the truth. I hope they will say that values like honesty, integrity, respect for other people, the convictions and values and beliefs mattered. John addresses his third letter to his beloved friend Gaius, and he says, "I have no greater joy than this, to hear that your children walk in the truth." He says the same thing to the elect lady and her children. He says, whom I love in the truth, and not only I, but all who love the truth, I was overjoyed to find that some of your children walk in the truth. He goes on to say that many deceivers have gone out in the world in his day and certainly in ours. Many deceivers who would undermine our children's sense of self-worth, paths of self-doubt, even paths of self-destruction, plenty of deceivers out there. Deceivers who would fill our children's minds with hatred and bigotry and prejudice. In the light of this week, I woke with a song from South Pacific ringing through my brain one morning. You remember the scene? Nellie Frobisher and Joe Cable are talking about what they've discovered about themselves and the innate prejudice that they're struggling with. And in a satirical fashion, Joe sings, "You've got to be carefully taught to hate and fear. For you've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you're 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught." And I hope our children will say that they were carefully taught. Taught that all persons are created equal in the image of God. Taught that bigotry and hatred are evil and that love and compassion is the way to life. I hope they will say that in our homes and our families and our churches, human dignity mattered. That every life was valued. That black lives matter. that Hispanic lives matter, that immigrant lives matter, that Muslim lives matter, that gay and lesbian lives matter, that all lives matter, and that every person is a beloved child of God. I hope they will say that they walked in the truth. Second, I hope they will say that we talked face to face. Now, here's one of those beautiful little images at the end of John's letters. He uses it twice. To the elect lady and to Gaius, he says, "Although I have much to write, I would rather not use paper and ink. Parentheses, I still believe in the dying art of letter writing. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk to you face to face." The Greek is literally mouth to mouth, heart to heart, person to person. I hope that our children and our grandchildren will say that we talked face to face often and a lot. I love it when the newspaper helps me out with my preaching. On Monday, did you see the article in the Detroit Free Press by Mara Schoenberg? It was entitled "Conversation, a Lost Art in the Digital Age." And she talks about seeing a group of young people at a table in a pizza parlor, not talking or joking, they were just staring at their cell phones. She quoted Margaret Shepherd, who said, "I feel like I have to speak up and advocate for communicating face to face and out loud." Talking face to face, I think St. John would understand. As parents and grandparents, it's so basic. We need to talk with our children. With the cell phones and the iPads and the TVs turned off, face to face and out loud. See, I'm old enough, I know some of you aren't, but I'm old enough to remember the invention of the television. I remember that first TV we had in our home. It was this beautiful polished piece of wooden furniture. It looked like a high altar over in the corner of the living room. And I can remember our family, my mom and dad and my brothers, gathering around the television to watch I Love Lucy and Ed Sullivan. It was wonderful. And then guess what? They invented TV trays. And TV dinners. TV trays and TV dinners, so that we didn't have to go to the dining room or the kitchen. We could just gather around the television and eat our dinner right there. I'm sure it was the first step toward the demise of the family dinner, but at least we were doing it together. Today, with personal technology and computers in every room, families scatter to their own corners. And then we wonder why we have nothing left to say to each other. We need to be in touch with the lives of our children, our grandchildren, our nephews, our nieces, the children of our community, the children of our church. We need to get in touch with their feelings, their frustrations, and their fears, to share their jumbled joys and sorrows, to listen to their hearts and emotions, to talk face to face. Third, I hope they will say, we laughed often. That's my way of saying what John says. John ends this letter by saying, I hope to come to you and talk to you face to face so that our joy may be complete. Joy. Full joy. Overwhelming joy. Incredible, complete joy. I hope they will say, we laughed often. Back in the 80s, one of the books that was written about men in America by Sam Keen was entitled Fire in the Belly. Some of you may remember it. It became a classic talking about men in our society. Keen says, one of the basic problems of American men is not our lust for power, our insatiable hunger for gadgets, our habit of repressing women and poor. Rather, he said, it is our lack of joy, our lack of joy. He writes, most of the men I know are decent, serious, hardworking, and would like to make the world a better place. What they are not is juicy, sensual, and fun. Now, at this point, I just have to tell you where I came from. Looking back, those are the kind of men I grew up with. I grew up in sturdy Pennsylvania Dutch, that is, German stock. We were Harnishes and Radickers and Hornbaughs all the way back. There was one bit of Irish jovial spirit thrown in the Alexanders, but that wasn't enough to overcome the terminal seriousness that was a part of my growing up. My father was a part of the greatest generation, and they were. They fought the war. They saved the world. They came back ready to make up for lost time. They had seen the disaster of war, and they were determined to build a better world for their children, and that's exactly what they did. But often, it wasn't much fun. With all due respect to my dad and the greatest generation, I've come to believe that life is much too important to be taken that seriously. I hope my children will say that I've lightened up, that I've learned to handle life with a gentle touch. I hope my children and grandchildren will say that we laughed, that there was complete joy. That we walked in the truth, that we talked face to face, that we had joy. Now, even though I'm a Methodist, my seminary preaching professor was a Scott Presbyterian, and he taught me that every sermon should have 3 points and a poem. Well, I'm sorry, Dr. Robertson, I have 4. Here's the last one. I hope they will say that they knew they were loved. I hope they will know it without a shadow of a doubt, and deep in their bones, that they were loved with an undying, unlimited, unfailing, unreserved love. This is the heart of John's letter. For families or for the church, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. In this, the love of God was made manifest among us, that God sent his only Son to be the expiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. We love because God first loved us. See, I grew up in a family where we kids knew that we were loved. It was taken for granted, but it wasn't necessarily said. I always knew that my dad loved me, but honestly, it wasn't until he was dying of cancer that I heard him say it. Right then and there, I decided that I would not wait that long to tell my sons that I love them. That I love them with every ounce of my being. You see, we need to keep telling them. We need to keep showing them that we love them, because you see, there are other messages out there. Messages from a consumer culture that says they are nothing more than what they buy. Messages of violence and fear and hatred. To counteract all of that, our children need to know that they are loved by us and loved by God with an undying love. So, I wonder what they'll say about us. The Harnishes and the Millers asked that question 40 years ago. 40 years later, hey, now I know. For my 68th birthday, my son wrote me a love letter. And this is what he wrote. Dad, I see your sense of wonder, and I feel it too. After your mom departed, I had the house to myself, reflecting on the wonderful few days we had together. That morning, I saw you standing in the living room, looking around, and I could see in your heart the sense of wonder, the sense of humble awe at the continuum of life. Who'd have ever guessed? I remember saying at Grandma's 90th birthday party, what must it be like from her perspective seeing all of us? And I suppose her answer is similar to what I observed in you that day. Pride, awe, humility, wonder, and of course, love. Thanks, Dad, for your giddy, humble sense of wonder. Thanks for inspiring it in me. Happy birthday from your oldest, goofiest, thankful, sometimes humble, and full of wonder, son. I wonder, what will they say about us? Will they say that we walked in the truth? Will they say that we talked face to face? Will they say that our lives were filled with joy and that they knew they were loved? May it be so. Amen.